Talk Back with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Many a tear had to fall.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City and video streaming. If you'd like to watch the show, you can go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNull.com. Normally, I do not have a guest on our evening program because I like to go to health and nutrition and then open the hour up for people to share their points of view and their thoughts and questions. However, I was not able to get my guest on earlier in the week because of the importance of discussing the myths behind what a person should do just by taking iodine. And we've been led to believe, oh, all you have to do is just take iodine. As long as you take iodine, you're safe. Nothing's going to happen to you. That's simply not true. First off, it doesn't account for all the other factors that are in radioactive material, including plutonium. And iodine, though it is important and can protect you and your thyroid, it can also be toxic. And most people are deficient in inorganic iodine. And so clearly we're misinformed, underinformed. And for the next 3 days, I'll be doing a comprehensive, original, in-depth investigative report on the truth about low-level radiation and our deadly nuclear legacy in the United States. Virtually everything you've been told about the nuclear industry has been misinformation or propaganda. I've been writing my commentary for the past 2 days, and it'll be presented tomorrow. So that said, I want to invite our guest, Joya Shopik, S-C-H-O-P-I-C-K, who is she's a health blogger. She has she is an author of Honest Medicine, Effective, Time-Tested, Inexpensive Treatments to Life-Threatening Diseases. And she's with us now, so she can share now what she was not able to share the other day. Nice to have you with us today, Joya.
Nice to be here, Gary. Nice to talk with you.
All right. What I'd like for you to do, if you would, let's go through some of the conditions that you feel people could be helped with if they simply knew more of what they were doing, and especially conditions that are related to our immune system or autoimmune conditions such as multiple sclerosis, lupus, Crohn's disease, that generally don't get a lot of attention in the mainstream press.
You're right. They don't get a lot of attention in the mainstream press, and the attention they do get is usually from pharmaceutical companies talking about drugs that, in the cases of these autoimmune diseases, these drugs are very toxic and often ineffective, oh, and very expensive. And what I found is that there are treatments that are inexpensive, as my subtitle suggests, inexpensive, time-tested, life-saving, that really, I think, could save healthcare. And, you know, I'm going to go that far and say that if more doctors would just know about these less expensive treatments that
well,
are...
Let's go through them in detail.
Okay. Well, the one that you were, that actually is the most effective for the autoimmune diseases that you were talking about is low-dose naltrexone. And low-dose naltrexone is a very, very low dose, as it says, of a drug that was approved by the FDA at a very high dose in 1984 for drug and alcohol addiction. Frankly, I don't think it's been that much of a success for drug and alcohol addiction, but at a teeny, teeny dose, you know, it's off-label, by the way, so that this is not making money for any pharmaceutical company. But a Dr. Bernard Bahari, a neurologist who recently died, found out in the 1980s that it was extremely effective for diseases. First, he found it with HIV/AIDS, and then the friend of his daughter had MS, and he tried it on her, and she, all the symptoms of the MS stopped progressing.
Okay, so, hold on 1 second, Julia. I don't know if you've listened to my program in the past or not, but as if you haven't, first, one of the most profitable areas of medicine is off-label prescribing. In fact, some of the major lawsuits settled, and one of the largest lawsuits settled in American history with pharmaceutical industry, was promoting drugs for one cause off-label to another. So that is extremely profitable. Secondly, we don't advocate drugs on the program because we have no way of knowing the side effects. I don't have the scientific literature, the physician's desk reference. Our program is focused exclusively upon the natural non-toxic approach. After all, Dr. Gupta and virtually a 100% of mainstream media allows its airwaves and medium to be used exclusively as promotion for the mainstream medicine. So I'd be happy to listen to any therapies you're going to offer that are exclusively non-toxic and natural.
Well, I don't know if you know about... Do you know about the ketogenic diet, Gary?
I'm very familiar with the ketogenic diet.
Because this is a diet that was used for many years, starting in the 1920s at Johns Hopkins in the Mayo Clinic, and it's very effective for pediatric epilepsy. But in the 1930s and 40s, when pharma started producing anti-seizure medications, guess what? The diet went out of favor. And one of the treatments in my book that's talked about is the ketogenic diet. And it's amazing the number of children that really do. And in this case, Gary, they actually, when the ketogenic diet works for these children, it actually cures the epilepsy. It stops the seizures.
Be specific with the diet so my audience understands. I don't know what you're referring to, so if you could, everything is in the details. I know a ketogenic diet is a high-fat, low-carb diet, but I need to know what type of diet we're referring to.
Absolutely. It is, as you said, very high-fat, low-carb, actually low-protein, too, and it is a diet that must be calibrated to each individual child. I want to stress that you just can't tell parents, oh, your child has epilepsy, just give them a lot of fat and no carbs and you'll be fine. It must be calibrated with a nutritionist dietitian to work very effectively to treat epilepsy. And the person who is the champion of this diet was the dad. By the way, the chapters that are contributed about the diet were contributed by parents whose children were literally, I want to say, poisoned by toxic pharmaceuticals. And these children were not told by their doctors that there was a diet out there that could work more effectively than these drugs. And these parents have all started organizations to educate the public about the diet. Foremost is Jim Abrams, who started the Charlie Foundation to help cure pediatric epilepsy. And Jim's child, Charlie, had intractable seizures. As you know, those are seizures that just won't quit. And he was given so many medications that he gave new meaning to the term bumping into walls. There's a video of him, of Charlie, at about 1 year old. Literally, he had a harness on him because of all the drugs he had been given. And of course, the seizures themselves were very toxic to the poor child.
Julie, I need you to go specifically, please, to give us specifics. What is the diet?
The diet is very calibrated to the individual child. This amount of carbohydrates, this amount of fats, I believe it's usually a 4-1-1 ratio. Four times the amount is the four is for fats.
And what type of fats are you referring to?
They're butter, cream, cream cheese. By the way,
Julie, you and I don't ever invite a guest on to argue with them, but we look at it. Let me just give an example how I would approach this, all right? We know that we have about 2.5 million American children with epilepsy. And indeed, these children do have seizures. It's a symptom of the epilepsy. What the underlying cause or causes are still unknown. And what we look at, from my point of view, is I would look at first, give the children the type of supplements that we know will impact seizures. And, for example, dimethylglycine. It's a very powerful antioxidant. It increases oxygenation to the tissues, including to the brain, and L-carnitine, which is the amino acid requires to make protein, deliver essential fatty acids to the cells. And all of the anticonvulsant drugs deplete carnosine. Also, L-tyrosine. It's a very important brain nutrient. And for children, depending upon their weight and size, it could be anywhere from 50 milligrams up to 100 milligrams. Also, I give magnesium, which is important for the nervous system, and it helps eliminate muscle spasms or reduces muscle spasms, and as well as taurine, and that is generally in a drop form. B-complex is important. Again, for an adult, it would be 100 milligrams three times a day, but for a child, it's less. And B6 in particular, I found very high doses with adults starting at 100 milligrams, going to 600 milligrams, have been beneficial, as well as methylated B12, because many of the children that I work with who are autistic, seizures are very common in autistic children. In fact, one of the children who is now completely normal, in fact, I just saw the child and his young man now, he's 15, and his mother, the Ortega family, they were at the Left Forum yesterday, or she was, where I was one of the keynote speakers. The very first way she found out about an alternative approach to seizures was by listening to a show where I was talking about turning off seizures. The child had autism, but seizures were so bad that the medications weren't working. She tried the anti-seizure protocol. It worked, and then that led her into the anti-protocol for autism, and that worked as well. Also, liquid garlic, zinc, coenzyme Q10, oxy-5000-fort, quercetin, very important, and alfalfa, black cohosh, hyssop, lobelia, very, very beneficial. And then I don't recommend dairy products because I find that you can help one condition and exacerbate another one. In fact, Crohn's disease is very common, and I feel a major contributing factor to Crohn's is dairy products, an allergic response, the IgG-mediated response in the gut to people who are allergic to dairy. So I take them towards a non-dairy, but prebiotic and probiotic source, like a natural kefir that is a rice kefir, or a natural yogurt, which is a rice or soy yogurt. Lots of Swiss chard, lots of seeds, soybeans in particular, beet greens, and then most important for the diet, as far from my perspective, would be the living foods, the juices, the green vegetable juices. Also, red grapes are very important, seaweeds, and small meals. No alcohol whatsoever. No animal proteins do I have in my particular approach. Now, again, I believe that we should be open to all forms of approaches. I don't believe that there's only one right, one true, but the one that you're suggesting for my own particular audience, they are certainly welcome to try that. But if it's through drugs and through an animal-based traditional diet, they would also be looking for a natural and non-animal-based approach. That said, please continue.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know if you read my book, Honest Medicine, but my husband had a brain tumor. And indeed, you're correct about we did treat him with all of these supplements that you recommended, that you were talking about. As a matter of fact, we had a nutritionist whose area, believe it or not, was brain tumors, Gene Wallace, and we found those all of those supplements. I believe every single one of them that you mentioned, we did use. But and I know that the ketogenic diet, you know, is possibly, you know, it definitely does have butter and cream and all of that. But a lot of parents have found that it does work. And I've done a lot of research in writing my book. And I was very impressed, Gary, with what people are saying about it.
Okay, I'm not suggesting that there has not been any benefit. I'm a big believer that we should be open at all times to all things to see what does work. I'm merely saying that when I'm working with children, which is frequent, and those children are suffering not just from seizures, but from multiple other conditions, the moment dairy is taken out of the diet, I have to then rebuild the entire integrity of the immune system within the gastrointestinal system, which is a very important part of their immune response, especially if they have attention deficit disorder, ADD, ADHD, learning disability, or anything on the autism spectrum clear to Asperger's syndrome. And so that's why my approach would be different, but I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't advocate an approach. To the contrary, I believe we should be listening to everything and see what is most reasonable and what makes sense for us.
Right.
What are the conditions you have beyond that?
Liver disease. Do you know about Dr. Bert Berkson?
No, I'm sorry, I don't know Dr. Berkson.
Dr. Berkson is a physician who also has an MS and a PhD in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And he uses intravenous alpha-lipoic acid, which is a natural substance at base, as you know. And in the mid-70s, he was presented with two patients. He was an intern then, and he had two patients who had liver poisoning from, they had liver disease from mushrooms, mushroom poisoning. And he was basically told to watch them die. And he found out through a circuitous method about this substance, and it cured the liver. And it was very, very interesting. This is probably, you know, it's a medical use of a natural substance in IV form. And he has been treating people with end-stage liver disease, things like hepatitis, cirrhosis. One of the people who wrote a chapter of my book, Mary Jo Bean, had a combination of hepatitis and cirrhosis. And she was given, oh gosh, months to live. And she went to Dr. Berkson 8 years ago, and she's doing well today. And he also found that with low-dose naltrexone, a lot of serious cancers responded very, very well. So he has, one of my chapter writers is Paul Maras, 8-year survivor of pancreatic cancer. And here you'll be happy to hear that Dr. Berkson, and I list this in the appendix of my book, has a very, very comprehensive nutritional protocol that he gives to every patient. And as you were intimating, it's customized to each patient. To go along, he would never say to just use, you know, those two treatments. And he's had some wonderful, wonderful successes. And the other treatment is for non-healing wounds. And the reason I included it is it's what got me started on the whole honest medicine trip that I've been on, you know, the whole journey. My husband was, as I told you before, and as my book talks about, a brain tumor survivor. And he was given 3 years to live. And through all sorts of things, like I was telling you, the nutritional protocols, he lived an extra 12 years. And in 2000, his tumor returned, the year 2001. And he did have the surgery, and his head would not heal, the suture line. And the doctors kept operating and operating, and he got brain injured. My husband got brain injured. He became paralyzed from too much medical intervention, is the only way I can put it, too many surgeries. And through a physician friend, an integrative physician friend, I heard about something called Silverlon, which is a wonderful treatment. It's pieces of material that are wet and put on the head, and it's kind of through an energy medicine kind of thing that it literally cured his non-healing wound overnight. And I found that the doctors were not at all interested in this natural treatment. They actually told me, oh, it was the vancomycin, the IV antibiotic, kicking in after 6 weeks. And I became very discouraged because I really felt that I had discovered something, not that I had discovered it, but I had found something that could be very, very helpful to lots of other patients, you know, with non-healing wounds. And so I set out to find treatments that would help people and not be toxic and would be inexpensive. You know, Silverlon was so much less expensive than the treatments they were using for him. Unfortunately, he was so debilitated by the treatments that they did use. You know, he had about 8 extra surgeries to cure, you know, to hope to cure the non-healing wound, and they didn't. The surgeries did not work. So I have been on kind of a mission to try to get the word out about less expensive, more effective treatments that have been around for a long time, that are patient evidence-based and non-pharmaceutically based. So those are the 4 treatments.
Okay. Well, I appreciate very much coming on and sharing that. I would add that it's very common for a lot of people whose immune system is weakened to have problems healing. And 2 ways I approach that is, one, I would topically use a spray with aloe vera and colloidal silver, and now it's colloidal gold as well, which has such a full spectrum kill rate against bacteria and fungus and yeast on the surface of the skin and just underneath, that is no longer than the problem. That's especially important for people who have very, let's say, a resistant type of bacteria, including antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And also with intravenous ozone, that is one of the best, if not the single best, full-spectrum natural antibiotic and antiviral for people who are having trouble healing. And as far as the liver, the liver is the single most important organ to detoxify for almost all conditions, because everything has to be brought back through the liver. And I find that free-form amino acids, generally 500 milligrams 3 times a day, that will help. Also, L-cysteine and N-acetylcysteine. Now, these are the sulfur amino acids. They have that strong, like, alpha-lipoic acid. The R fraction have very strong sulfur smell, and anywhere from 500 to 1,000 milligrams, and generally taken with a protein shake because it's a little hard on the stomach otherwise, you'll have a tremendous healing rate inside the liver itself. And then GABA, about 1,000 milligrams. And then glutathione, because nothing will protect the liver better than glutathione, and especially if you are an alcoholic or if you have a fatty liver. You don't have to be an alcoholic, and you don't have to have cirrhosis, nor do you have to have hepatitis in order to have a fatty liver. A lot of people have a fatty liver simply because of a poor diet. And taking in 5 cc's of glutathione 2 or 3 times a day, a week, is an enormously important way of helping the liver. But in particular, if you have had hepatitis B or C, if you have had cirrhosis of the liver, or if you have an alcoholic liver in addition to a fatty liver, it's very beneficial. And then on top of that, so that you can have an oral glutathione, which is not easily absorbed, by taking the alpha-lipoic acid and reduced glutathione and methionine, and that helps, as well as pantothenic acid and also high levels of vitamin C, and also coenzyme A with inositol hexaphosphate 6, what is called IP6. It really enhances natural killer cell activity, which helps the liver as well. And then lots of green tea, black tea, red tea, oolong tea, white tea. They all come from the same tea. Leaf is just how they're processed. And then just a very wholesome raw foods diet, staying away from all saturated fats, fatty foods, except avocados and coconut. and lots of green juices. The chlorophyll is the great healer of the liver. So those are some things I would suggest as well. And I thank you very much for coming on and sharing your thoughts with us. If people want more information, they can go to Honest Medicine, my guest, Julia Shopik. Thank you very much, Julia. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment, and I'm going to share with you some natural sedatives to restore you full sleep. A lot of people are not getting a good night's sleep, and you should. And if you don't have a good night's sleep, then what's going to happen is your immune system is going to be adversely affected. Now, here's what you should know. You cannot make up sleep. If you've lost sleep, sleeping extra the next day will not help you. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. If you'd like to call in and share your questions, thoughts on any issue that you find important for you, now's the time to do it. From now until the rest of the program, I'll keep our phone lines open. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from you. And now let's take a look at not that occasional sleeplessness. I mean, if you are exhausted because you've just worked too hard, if you've had a very traumatic experience, then it's natural that night to have a problem getting to sleep. I'm talking about the habitual sleepiness that comes in the form of insomnia. And chronic insomnia is an epidemic in this country. All you have to do is look at all the ads on television. And did you notice that the side effect could be death from the medication they're suggesting? Well, I believe we can do something a lot easier than that. There are several things you can do. First and foremost, here are the easy things. Make sure there's no light on in the room. Any light at all in the room, even a night light, could end up causing the brain to perceive that there's still light on, and hence you shouldn't be asleep, and hence the pineal gland will not secrete the melatonin it requires, in which case you won't go into the deep rapid eye movement sleep, where it's most restorative. So turn off the lights. Secondly, keep all digital equipment away from you. A lot of people don't realize that your cell phone and the digital clock, the television, all have the capacity to pulse electromagnetic pulses that will affect the chromosomes and the cells in the brain. That in turn can hyperstimulate the brain. It actually heats the brain, and that can cause an excitotoxic reaction. That'll keep you awake. Don't eat within 3 hours of going to bed. If you're really hungry and you just have to eat something, eat popcorn. Popcorn really has no calories, won't affect your glucose level at all, so it won't pick your blood sugar up, because the moment your blood sugar comes up, the body thinks you're in an anabolic state and you're ready to go again. Now you're in a catabolic state, and you need to rest, recover, repair, rejuvenate, and detoxify. So you start eating too close before going to bed, you shouldn't have food in your belly when you go to bed. And that's why the old way of eating, where you generally ate at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, was the correct way. Now people push their eating back further and further, and they generally have two meals. They have a later meal, and then they have a snack meal, and then they're sitting in bed frequently eating. That means that the body now has food in the stomach. The body doesn't like having food in the stomach, especially when your whole metabolism is now slowed down, because once you hit the bed, your pulse rate comes down, your blood pressure comes down, your whole metabolism slows down by about 10%. And hence, there's no way of digesting the food. Because look at the stomach as a pear that's up on its end. You can't get food from the bottom of the stomach, where you have what is called the pyloric sphincter, a little flap that opens and gets it into the intestine so it can make its way through and out. Instead, it's just stuck there overnight. That, in turn, you don't want the body digesting all night, because what if the mechanism doesn't shut off? Then you end up causing severe hyperacidity within the stomach. And a lot of people do. In fact, how many times have you seen the ad where the person wakes up and starts drinking water and it's not enough and they drink more water? You start eating anything with salt or protein before you go to bed, the body starts becoming dehydrated. You start craving water. That'll affect your central nervous system and your blood pressure. It makes your blood thicker, which is dangerous. By the way, do you know more people have strokes at around 3 o'clock in the morning than any other time? So don't eat before you go to bed. And by the way, if you really feel hungry, take some ice water with lemon juice in it. That kills the appetite immediately. Then also, you've got... You also want to make sure that you're not exercising before you go to bed. If you want to relax, that's fine. Hot shower, that'll help you. Calcium and magnesium, about 2 hours before you go to bed, that's the best time to take it, 1,000 milligrams. Anywhere from 1 to 3 milligrams of melatonin, about 50 milligrams of B-complex, and 100 milligrams of inositol and pantothenic acid. Also, hops, kava, lemon balm, passion flower, skullcap, and valerian root, along with an amino acid. Those are all herbs, and an amino acid, and you take those as directed on the bottle, anywhere from 25 to 100 milligrams, and then theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E, at 200 milligrams. That works extremely well. And avoid alcohol. You have alcohol, wow, that or any caffeine, you're going to stimulate your system. And eggs, cheese, meat, sauerkraut, all are bad if you're trying to sleep. Also, if you're taking nasal decongestants and cold medicine, they have known stimulants in them. So that's how you get a good night's sleep. We'll take some calls. Tom. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Gary. I've heard you predict that Hillary Clinton will be the next president, and I was wondering, does that mean that Obama will drop out?
No.
How will that work?
I believe that Hillary Clinton did the right thing for herself, and you would expect it coming from the Clinton family. This filled in her resume. All you had to see was in her campaign when she was running. A lot of people didn't care for her because of her kind of rough and tumble style. Also, they remember all the fiascos with her and her husband in the White House. A lot of people from the more progressive movements were concerned about her being a major proponent of GATT and NAFTA and selling it around the United States when it meant going against the unions and causing jobs to be exported. A lot of people also felt that her whole idea of being one of the leading voices for neoliberal globalized policies meant that the outsourcing of jobs would become first, and then privatization of power structures in other countries, water, electric, food, was high up on the agenda. These were the people that their administration surrounded themselves with, and so they're not going to come back to her. But the people who are likely to come back are just your standard rank-and-file Democrats, and by extension, those Democrats that consider themselves liberal, no different than those Republicans who consider themselves a George Bush conservative. These tend to be people who are really strong ideologues. They are not flexible. They do not see the benefit of anyone else's ideas. In fact, almost always, if you listen to Rush Limbaugh and John Hannity, and Coulter, and then on you listen to Keith Olbermann, who is no different, but just from the left, what you see is 90% of what they spend their time doing is blaming the other side for all the problems in the world and never being honest about what they've contributed to any of the problems. So when Clinton was out there, she was getting hammered. And one of the reasons she was getting hammered is because she couldn't show that she had done anything outside of being a lawyer for, I think it was the Rose Law Firm, and representing a lot of very top Fortune 500 clients. She had no foreign policy skills. Well, she got them now. She filled in the resume as Secretary of State and now getting very hard-lined. You'll hear her name come up more when it went against Libya than anyone else's, including President Obama. Now, there's a good and bad to that. First off, we should never have intervened in Libya. Not because we shouldn't be concerned about the people seeking freedom in the country, we should. But you have to be very pragmatic. The 22 Arab League nations that wanted the no-fly zone and demanded that the United States and the UN, and when they're talking about the UN, you're talking about Britain, France, United States. Those three were the only ones that were really going to go in there and do something. We should never have done that for them. Last year, the largest military complex contract in history was signed with Saudi Arabia. It was $40 billion. In any given year, Saudi Arabia buys more arms than Israel. It is the number one procurer of arms and state-of-the-art weapon systems, intelligence systems of any country in the world outside of China, Russia, more so than even Great Britain or France. It has unlimited amounts of money, and it has to spend that because it's afraid not of Iran. It could beat Iran any day of the week. Iran's just a ragtag little puffball compared to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is a very lethal nation. It was against its own people. The majority of the people are Sunni, but there's a very vocal, underprivileged, completely repressed, disadvantaged Sunni minority. Well, remember, an empowered minority causes you more problems than a quiet majority. And that's why they wanted this, to protect themselves from their own people. Now, you know, of all these nations, only three of the 22 Arab League have ever even pretended to be anything other than either massive theocracies or despotic regimes. Only three say that we have parliaments, we go by constitutional provisions, and those are jokes. Do you know a single one of the Arab nations that provides freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of challenge, and honest elections for opposition parties that would redistribute the basis of the law so that everyone was equal, including women? Do you know a single one of the 22 Arab nations that could withstand that acid test? Tom?
No, I don't.
There is none.
Right.
Now, did we miss something, or didn't Saudi Arabia just send a whole division into its neighboring country to protect it in Bahrain? And weren't the Bahrainians being shot? And weren't there snipers from the government on the roof? And didn't that also happen with 56 citizens gathering to protest the government that we also support that government in Yemen? And weren't they killed just in one day, 56 civilians wanting pro-democracy movement, and we didn't call them out on it? Why don't we have a no-fly zone over or a military intervention in every one of these countries? Because every single one of these countries is now going to fall. Or there'll be tens of thousands of people killed rising up against them. Because it won't stop. It started. You saw what happened in a fairly bloodless revolt in Tunisia. Also fairly bloodless in Egypt. Very bloody in Libya. Nobody likes Gaddafi. I mean, he's a complete sociopath. But if they wanted him to stop attacking his own people, that's a civil war. Gaddafi was not attacking the United States. And if you want to go after terrorist countries, countries supporting terrorism, then the number one you'd have to go after would be Yemen. Number two would be Saudi Arabia. So don't give the idea that, oh, well, you know, he's a terrorist. No, once again, we're hearing the same idiots in the media that beat the drums, including on CNN. Of course, you would expect Fox to beat the drums for any war. I don't care if there was a war of the Mohegans. You'd see someone from them. Geraldo would get on his blackjack and try to win another war by jumping around the sand dunes saying, I'm here, I'm here. How pathetic some people are for attention. Instead of just pulling back and looking for the truth. The Arab League has enough arms and munitions and missiles and security systems that it could easily have created its own no-fly zone. It has its own air forces, more than capable of stopping Gaddafi, more than enough to pull to knock out all of his munitions systems, all of his arms systems. They could have stopped this within one day. Why didn't any of the Arab Leagues choose to go in there and fight Gaddafi, but rather ask us to stop and then say, oh, but you went too far. This is not really what we wanted you to do. What, do you think we're idiots? Of course that's what you wanted us to do. And that's what we do. We go in and we blow the hell out of everything if anybody's left. According to the Great Crusades, well, let God sort out if all the people die, who was right, who was wrong. You know, what are we going to be there when the next group of people take place, and what's going to happen from that? Why do you think the Arab League didn't go in there and still its own no-fly zone, which could easily have done? Has all the planes that they could possibly need, and Gaddafi's are old, and you know they're not effective, and they couldn't possibly stand against even one of his Arab League neighbors, let alone 22. Why do you think they didn't do a single thing they wanted us to do it for? Tom?
They do. Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, just as you said, because they get us to do it. But I'm a little confused because I was curious about what you were saying about Hillary Clinton and Obama. Is Obama going to run for a second term?
Of course he is. Who was the one who was advocating strong, you know, now we got to go in there? She's taken the lead on this. This gives her a big merit badge for those neocons who really support what her husband did in the Balkans and a lot of the illegal bombing and using depleted uranium, knowing full well its impact. This was exactly what she needed to affirm herself, that she is the ultimate corporatist politician that would define her legacy, just like her husband, by who's got the biggest bank book coming to Washington? You're the ones who's going to spend the night in the Lincoln bedroom. And therefore, the foreign policy under Clinton, the domestic policy under Clinton, would be absolutely no different than it was under Obama or Bush. But on this case, she can say that she took the initiative, and she would already, I'll bet that she has her people, campaign people, looking at how they can spin this, how she was tough against, you know, I can see the campaign ads. When it came time to standing up for the freedom movements around the world, Hillary Clinton, and then you'll hear her sound bites. Got to understand, we should never have done this.
No, no, but do you think she'll challenge Obama in the next election?
Do I believe it? Yes, I do. But it depends upon how many more mistakes Obama makes.
But you think she's going to be the next president, meaning that
if she runs, she will eat everyone alive. Yeah, so, because remember, the largest group of voters are going to be the Democrats this time around, and the and I'll tell you why, because the Tea Party will split the power of the presidents on the right. It'll either be Romney, and they may try to get Palin to run. Michelle Bachmann would be a joke. In fact, all the Republicans are going to be jokes. Haley Barbour's not going to run. Jimmy's not going to run. You got to understand that the Tea Party is going to be splitting. The very strong members of the Tea Party will break off. They won't support the regular candidate. So you're going to have a division between the conservatives, hardline conservatives, and the Tea Party. And on the left, you will have the people call themselves the moderates, the conciliatory group of the Obamaites, versus those who want more dynamic action, who will promise to turn everything around in the economy, to get those jobs back in America. Oh, you mean the ones that you and your husband sent off to China and India? And that will be the difference. The Democrats will finally come together, and that's how I believe that she will win, if she runs. But then again, we do not know what her emotional state is at this point, or her physical state, how tired she is. If nothing else, give the woman credit for all the traveling she has done. I'm just very sad when I see that this is how we deal with our problems in the world, because look at the other side. What are some of the things Gaddafi could do if he wanted to cause the world some pain, including all those people in the Arab states that went against him? When you have nothing to lose, when everyone's against you, he has no place he can go now. Unlike the Mubarak, who could have gotten out of the country and didn't, and the president of Tunisia, who's in Saudi Arabia, and a lot of the other despotic people who went to other countries, there's no country's going to take. He's dead. And it'll probably come rather soon, and it'll probably come from one of the CIA-sponsored turncoats within his own administration, who will be the next leader if he just gets rid of Gaddafi. So Gaddafi doesn't have long to go, and he'll be killed in a coup. And but if you know you had nothing to lose near Gaddafi, what could you do that could cause the world some problems?
To do what he's doing.
It's called oil.
What Saddam Hussein did, he set the oil on fire too.
Well, that the oil wells you can put out. You know, that causes an environmental problem. It doesn't change the economic status of things. But if you put your in, if you knew you couldn't fly and you knew you couldn't fight your enemy, you're going to get shot. Now they're shooting the actual army and the tanks and anti-personnel carriers. Then you create a whole group of saboteurs and you start sabotaging every oil ship you can find. That causes problems. That's big problems, not just environmental problems for every one of those big ones that sink, but the economic problems. So you see, in effect, they took a civil war that the Arab League could have contained, and they made a complete, total sociopath capable of lashing out, and we do not know what he is capable of doing, but we know that he will do whatever he can because he knows he's a dead man walking. Okay. Once again, all the talking heads were wrong. And it's just embarrassing to listen to these people who think they know what they're talking about on television.
Yeah. So,
Tom, hope I answered your question.
Yeah, one other thing, Gary, distilled water, I heard you talk about, I didn't hear you talk about that. Is that safe or not?
Yes, it's safe. It doesn't have minerals in it. Your body needs minerals, but it's safe.
Yeah. But you can get the minerals from vitamins and other things, right?
No, you're not getting minerals from vitamins. Vitamins are vitamins. If you want to get your minerals, you have to eat foods that are rich in minerals. Your grains, legumes, vegetables, very rich in minerals. And then supplement with a mineral supplement. But it's always good to get your minerals from water as well, because they're hard minerals and it's very protective for your heart. All the best to you, Tom. Arthur, where are you living, Arthur? I don't see a location here.
Hello?
Yeah, Arthur, where do you live?
In Brooklyn, New York.
Hi, how can we help you?
I have been dealing recently with achy calves and persistent congestion and I wasn't sure if it was the weather or something else.
Now, when you say you have congestion, I'm assuming that your sinuses are full and you have trouble breathing.
Yes.
Is it better in the daytime or worse, better or worse in the morning or in the evening?
Well, I thought it was worse when I would go outside, but no, it's been happening inside too. So
right.
It's just sporadic and
Do you go out for a power run or jog or walk?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you go out and exercise?
Recently, because of my sore calves, I haven't been able to do that because, my calves, it affects my walking.
What affects your walking?
My calves.
Are you overweight?
No, I'm about 140.
All right. Have you had any pain in the calves under normal conditions?
Pain in my calves?
Yes.
Yes.
Have you had an examination to see whether or not you have intermittent claudication? A circulatory
No.
problem. All right. I would do that.
Okay.
First check to see your circulation. Then do a simple process. In the morning, if you go out and work out and you find that you're able to have your sinuses open up and you clear your nose, and if that if the discharge is clear, that's good. Could be viral, but at least it's less likely to be bacterial. Bacteria, you're generally going to have a yellowish-orange, darker
yes.
mucus. Then see whether or not the discharge is out of your nose or out of your throat. Also check to see if throughout the day, you're clearing your throat that way, all right? And does that come be at any time, or is it more likely to come after you've had a meal? Because if clearing the throat comes after a meal, there's a high probability that you've had an allergic reaction to something that you've eaten or consumed during that meal. Then give yourself a basic head decongestant. Take a towel and fill a sink up with some hot water so it steams. Put in about 10 drops of wintergreen, and eucalyptus oil. The wintergreen and eucalyptus oil are phenomenal for opening up the sinuses, and they'll allow a really profuse perspiration. If you have an opportunity to get into a sauna, a dry sauna for a half hour is very good also. Then, because what you want the body to sweat. You want to be able to get the body to drain. Then you want to take a look at the nutrients that are known to help the sinuses and to turn off some of the activity. You want to decongest. Quercetin is your number one nutrient, 500 milligrams, about 10 times in a day. Vitamin D3. 2,000 units. Then take some wild oregano oil and put 10 drops under the tongue and hold it there for about 30 seconds. Then swallow it down. Might burn a little bit, but that goes into your lymphatic system. Also, take Paudarco, P-A-U-D-A-R-C-O, about 100 milligrams. You might also want to spray some colloidal silver in the nose. And then get yourself some garlic. You can do some roasted garlic, which is very good, or gently, very low heat, just till it's translucent, cook some garlic and put that cooked garlic into a miso broth and add in there a half a cup of shiitake mushrooms. Take the stem off and use the cap of the mushroom. Add into that some raw sweet onions, a half an onion. Now that broth of having the raw onion, the shiitake mushrooms, the miso broth, and the garlic sautéed is extremely powerful for helping decongest the head. Also, I would use vitamin C, about 500 milligrams an hour, or up to about 5,000 milligrams, for the first week, and then I would go up even more the second week. And those are the things that I would start with. They're relatively easy to do. Okay?
I have a question. I was thinking about doing ozone therapy. Do you suggest that?
Ozone therapy is very good. It can knock out both bacteria and viruses. But you first want to know what you have. Everything starts with doing a proper diagnosis. And you can't self-diagnose. One of the good things, if you get a good physician, is that they can do the test to determine, is it bacterial? Is it viral? Is it an infection? So at least you know what we're trying to clear up. Is it an infection out of your jaw, out of your gums that have migrated up? Could be any number of things causing a local focal infection. So first you deal with that. Then come back and I can give you a detailed protocol once we know what we're dealing with. This is what I've just suggested, is it wouldn't matter what it is. What I've suggested is an overall bromade to help you. All right?
All right, thank you.
All the best to you, Arthur. And by the way, if you've got pains in your calf and you're not overweight, and you just go to walk and you have pains in your calf, I would definitely have it checked by a cardiologist to see if you have any blockages in the veins, in the calf. If it is, okay, there's things we can do to help it. I'm looking at the clock and we're out of time. I don't have time for any more calls. I want to thank you all for sharing it. Tomorrow, we start a really in-depth, very serious look at all the misinformation and lies and deception by our government about how safe our nuclear reactors are, how it's not a problem to have low-level radiation. Oh, yeah, it is. And you'll hear it all tomorrow. Noon. Have a nice day.